ministers, ministers, ministers of defense, generals. They come from all over the world for the sake of providing moral support for Israel. What did Al-Aqsa operation do to this entity and to its leaders? The next point. Of course, these are the results, the repercussions, the impact, which must be explained and made clear. I don't have time to explain, but we have to make it clear to understand that the current sacrifices in Gaza and in the West Bank and on all fronts, yes, these sacrifices are worthy. They deserve it. The issue deserves these sacrifices. Some people ask, were Hamas anticipating the reaction? Yes, these achievements, these repercussions, these results, they deserve such sacrifice because this laid the foundation for a new stage in the conflict with this enemy, a historic new phase in the fate of the Palestinian people and the fate of the people of the region, the countries of the region. This is what happened in Al-Aqsa storm operation. So it did deserve this sacrifice. There was no other option. There isn't any other option. The other option is to be silent, is to wait for death, to wait for the West Bank and Gaza or the Al-Aqsa to be dashed away, to wait for more siege, the siege being tightened, for the death of the prisoners. So this was the right choice. It was the correct choice. It was the wise, courageous choice. It was the choice that was required. It was taken at the right time. And it indeed deserves all this sacrifice. The next point. How did the enemy react to the event of October 7, Al-Aqsa storm? It was clear from the very beginning that this enemy was in a state of loss. It was lost, confused, because, you know, it was Saturday, the night of a holiday. It was a great time which was chosen by the resistance. So it seems they were all asleep and they had all been stayed up late and drunk, not just on the outskirts of Gaza, but even in Tel Aviv and Al-Quds, because it took hours for Netanyahu and Gallant and others to show their faces. So they were in a state of shock, in a state of loss, insanity, anger with insanity at the same time. And so, when they went to retake the settlements on the outskirts of Gaza from the Palestinian resistance fighters, they are the ones who committed massacres against the Israeli settlers. It's not like they say, they accuse Hamas and the other Palestinian resistance factions, and now we're seeing articles and investigations inside the Israeli entity which provide testimony in this regard. And also, in the near future, when the conflict comes to an end and the investigative committees begin their work, the whole world will discover that those who say they were civilians killed by Hamas or killed by Palestinians were indeed killed by the bullets and the missiles and the bombs of the Israeli military, which was acting angrily and in a state of insanity and loss. Now, in light of this, the situation in Gaza and this act which shattered the enemy, it seems that the enemy does not learn the lessons of the past at all. They always say that Israel learns its lessons, it investigates, it draws lessons. It doesn't seem to be the case. It doesn't seem that it learns its lessons, nor does it seem that it draws to improve later on, especially when it comes to their experience and the wars with the resistance factions in Palestine and Lebanon. That's clear. What is happening today, it happened before in Lebanon, in the July 2006 war and in other wars in Gaza. Of course, there were different intensity, but the same in general, the same wars with the same parties, one of the biggest mistakes committed before and which the Israeli government, the government of the enemy, is committing today, is to set high goals which they cannot achieve, goals which they won't be able to reach. For example, when they said that the goal is to eliminate Hamas in Gaza, to eliminate all of Hamas, sometimes they say to topple the government of Hamas, other times they say to eliminate the leadership of Hamas, sometimes to eliminate the military wing. But they said also annihilating or eliminating Hamas. Is there anyone, any sane person who says this? And then they set another goal regarding the prisoners, to retrieve the prisoners being held by the resistance factions in Gaza without any conditions. Now, anyone who has a long experience with the resistance factions, ever since the beginning of the emergence of the Palestinian and Lebanese resistance factions up until today, has there been any time whereby the Israelis have been able to liberate their prisoners without an exchange, without negotiations? So they don't draw lessons. What happened in Lebanon in 2006 was the same. After the abduction of the two prisoners, they said the goal was to crush Hezbollah, eliminate Hezbollah. They had the support of America, the West, the support of Arab countries, etc. So the goal was to crush Hezbollah in Lebanon and to retrieve the two prisoners without any conditions. And they fought a war for 33 days. They didn't succeed neither in crushing Hezbollah nor retrieving the prisoners without negotiations and a swap. The same thing happening today in Gaza. Of course, there's one important difference, which is the scale of the crimes and massacres and killings and the acts of genocide which they're committing there. In the July 2006 war, more than 150,000 homes were demolished, either completely or partially, thousands of martyrs. But in the end, the Lebanese people persevered. The resistance persevered on the battlefronts, and the enemy was forced to stop and was forced to back down from their goals, and they took them down from the ladder. Today, what's happening in Palestine, what's happening in the Gaza Strip, brothers and sisters, it also reveals the stupidity of the Israelis and also their limited capabilities, their failure. What they're doing is killing people in Gaza, women, children. Most of the martyrs are women and children. Most of the martyrs, the high majority, are civilians. They're demolishing churches, mosques, hospitals, schools. Nothing is immune, nothing is protected. Whether people or buildings, they demolish buildings filled with people, they demolish suburbs, streets in front of the eyes of the whole people. Does this need the strongest air force in the region? Does it need the strongest army in the region? Any army which has an air force and some missiles can do this. But for a whole month, they weren't able to make one, not even one, real military achievement. And when they advanced on land, the same scenario, just like the July 2006 war, when they found that the bombings and the massacres and forcing people to be displaced and thousands of martyrs and wounded, this did not have any impact on the resistance. When they realized this, they began with their land operation. And we saw the heroics in Barun al-Ras and Bint Jbeil and in the frontline villages and in Haita and elsewhere. The whole world saw this, and the massacres of the tanks and those who were killed and injured in the ranks of the enemy. The same thing is happening today in Gaza. They are trying to carry out a large-scale operation to show the world. They're trying to show the world they're not doing this, but they are afraid. And because they are a failure, And even these limited operations which they're carrying out, we all saw the courage and the heroics of the Palestinian resistance fighters. When the Palestinian fighter advances and puts the bomb on a tank, how will this army fight in such an environment with such fighters? So this is how the enemy acted and is continuing to act. When it comes to direct military action, they're hesitant, they're in a state of loss, they're weak, they're afraid. Of course, what they're good at for 75 years up until today, what they're good at is committing massacres like they did in Palestine and in Lebanon and in all the region. The aim is to harm the will of the leaders of resistance so they can raise the white flag, surrender and bow down. And I believe that the visions which we're seeing every day, night, every hour from Gaza, these visions, what we see, these children, these women, these men, these people who come from beneath the rubble, those who cry out, they're all sending a message to this enemy saying that the end of this conflict will be the victory of Gaza and the defeat of this enemy. And you, by carrying out massacres and killing, you won't be able to achieve any results whatsoever. Brothers and sisters, the next point, everything happening in Gaza, which the whole world is witnessing, once again reveals and once again proves, first of all, the brutal nature, barbaric nature of this entity, Israel. This entity which was planted in our region, in Palestine, based upon the cursed Balfour Declaration, which memory of which was yesterday. For 75 years until today, we've seen wars against the people of a region. Palestinian people, the Egyptian, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, the whole region. Today, after all the years whereby they tried to tell the Arab people and the Islamic people and the people of the world, they tried to say that you have a democratic state as your neighbor, a state of human values, an ethical state, a state of the law, a state which respects international law. Today, the martyrs of Gaza, the children and women of Gaza, the oppressed people of Gaza, just like with all the massacres which previously happened, they contradict all of these lies which the policies and international and Arab media outlets try to promote, to trick our people in order to normalize with this entity and be silent towards what it does. And second, it proves the direct American responsibility for all these killings and massacres and barbarism and this American hypocrisy. From day one, Biden said, we call on them to accept international law. You can defend yourselves, but defend it, but protect civilians. This is hypocrisy. These are lies. All these days in Gaza is being crushed in front of the eyes of the international community, the country of the world, the Western countries, which speak out about human rights, about values. They make false excuses and say that Hamas beheaded children. They didn't provide any evidence whatsoever to back up this. At the same time, they are silent, whilst we have thousands of children who are being beheaded in Gaza and shredded apart in Gaza. To understand the true nature of America and the West and the international community and the true nature of the so-called international laws and the law of the jungle, which has the main say in this world, which rules the world. Brothers and sisters, we must realize today that America is completely responsible for the current war in Gaza and for its people. And Gaza and Israel, is just a tool used to implement. America is what is preventing the condemnation of Israel in the Security Council. America is the one preventing a ceasefire in Gaza. America is the one who is preventing the aggression from stopping in Gaza. And America, once again, as Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, said, America is proving itself once again as the great Satan. It is the primary party responsible for all massacres previously from today, from Hiroshima to Vietnam to Afghanistan to Iraq, Palestine, the whole region. And it must be held accountable for its crimes and massacres, and it must be punished for what it's doing against the peoples of our region. And hence, brothers and sisters, the Islamic resistance in Iraq took the initiative and targeted the American military bases, the bases of the American occupation in Iraq and in Syria. Because the Americans, they are the ones managing the war in Gaza. They are the ones who should pay the price for the aggression and their support and their occupation and crimes in Iraq and in Syria and Palestine. And this is a wise decision taken by the leadership of the Islamic resistance in Iraq. A wise decision, a correct decision, a courageous, blessed decision. And we heard yesterday and also today, we heard about new steps being taken towards occupied Palestine from more than one front, and this will become clearer in the next hours and days. And from here, I salute those honorable resistance fighters who are fighting in the cause of their colleagues and supporting the oppressed and participating indeed in this battle. Brothers and sisters, the next point is that the duty of any honorable free person in the world to reveal these truths which we just talked about in the fight for public opinion, which they're waging by lies and fabrications and incitement. And the world public opinion is beginning to turn against those tyrants, against the killers, the real killers of children. The whole world is witnessing thousands of women and children being killed and their bodies being shredded apart in front of the cameras of the world. This is the least which can be done in this conflict, the fight of right against wrong. This fight against brutality represented by America and Britain and Israel and some Western countries. Today, defending the people of Gaza is an act of humanity. Anyone who writes anything, who takes a stance, who protests, who supports, who raises his voice, who takes any step, in addition to those who fight on the ground, this is part of humanity. Those who are silent, they must reconsider their humanity, if they're really humans or not, and their religion, if they belong to a certain religion, and reconsider their honor, if they allege they have any honor. And here, everyone must take their responsibilities. Brothers and sisters, now when it comes to responsibilities, in 1948, when the world abandoned the Palestinian people, this entity was established, and the Palestinian people and all the people of the region, all the countries of the region, they paid the price of the establishment, the repercussions of the establishment of this entity. The repercussions did not just reach the Palestinians. We saw the Egyptians, Syrians, Lebanese, and maybe Lebanon and its people were one of the most affected and impacted by the existence of this entity of aggression. This is a historic fact which nobody can deny. The same applies today. What is happening today in Gaza is not like the previous wars. It is not an event like the previous events. It is not a conflict like previous conflicts. It is a decisive, historic conflict. What comes after it is not like what the situation was before. And so this requires for everyone to take their responsibilities. When we talk about taking responsibilities, we must set these short-term goals, which we must all strive to achieve. And we have two goals. The first goal for us, which we must work on day and night, is to put an end to the aggression on the Gaza Strip, to put an end to the war on the Gaza Strip. And the second goal is for Gaza to achieve victory, for the Palestinian resistance in Gaza to achieve victory, and for Hamas specifically to achieve victory in Gaza. These goals must be clearly set, and we must strive to achieve them. The first goal is to end the war and the aggression. The reasons are humanitarian, ethical, religious, legitimate, and they're not up for argument. Regarding the second goal, brothers and sisters, and all those who are listening, it's in the interest of all sides. Of course, first and foremost, it's in the interest of the Palestinian people, all the Palestinian people. However, because there are some people here who are trying to fabricate. Some say that if Gaza achieves victory, it means Iran is victorious. If Gaza achieves victory, it means the Muslim Brotherhood has achieved victory in the region. This is misleading. This is incitement. It's fabricating. It's fabrication. The victory of Gaza means a victory of the Palestinians, the victory of the prisoners in Palestine, the victory of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and Al-Aqsa and Al-Quds and the Church of the Holy Church of Nativity. It's also a victory for the people and countries of the region, especially the countries of the neighborhood. There's no time to explain in detail, but I must point out to the following. The victory of Gaza today is a national interest for Egypt. The victory of Gaza today is in the national interest of Jordan. The victory of Gaza today is in the national interest of Syria. And first and foremost, before any other country, the victory of Gaza today is in the national interest of Lebanon. And I believe that this was explained over the past few days. What does it mean if Israel were to achieve victory in Gaza? This means that the resistance in Gaza will be defeated. What would be the repercussions on the country of the region, on Palestine, on the Palestinian cause, especially on Lebanon? Security-wise, politically-wise, people-wise, demographically-wise. And the enemy threatens Lebanon and its people. And it warns, whilst it is still drowning in the sands of Gaza and failing, but at the same time it threatens the Lebanese people. What did it say? It threatens by using the blood and body parts of the children and women in Gaza, the demolished mosques and churches in Gaza. This is complete brutality and barbarism. Brothers and sisters, everyone has a responsibility. Every free, honorable person in the world must take responsibility. The countries, Arab and Islamic countries and states, must exercise maximum efforts to impose an end to the aggression on Gaza at the very least. If you don't want to work to achieving the second goal, but your religion, your humanity, your ethics, your conscience imposes on you to strive to achieve the first goal of ending the aggression. It's not enough to issue statements of condemnation and denunciation, cut off ties, withdraw ambassadors. It's not enough to condemn. At the same time, we send gas and oil to Israel. We send food to Israel. It's very unfortunate. In the previous wars, the narrative in the Arab states and governments, they spoke to America, but today we dream. We told the Arab and Islamic, we used to say cut off the oil from America. Now we say cut off the oil and gas from Israel. Cut off the food supplies from Israel. Stop exporting what you export to Israel. I read what some Israelis wrote. Some people made fun of the Arab countries. They speak about 22 governments and states, Arab governments and states, can't take any sick person or wounded person outside Gaza, can't do anything. Is that the level we've reached? Is that how incapable they are? The people of Gaza are telling the Arab governments, we don't want your weapons, your armies, your missiles. However, don't you have just a bit of strength to open the Rafah crossing and to allow assistance and to allow the wounded to leave? Can't those people come? The kings, the presidents, the religious clerics, senior figures in the Arab and Islamic world, them and their women and children, can't they stand on the Rafah crossing near the women and children of Gaza and transform the border with Gaza to a podium from where they can address the whole world and their people and hold everyone responsible? Anyway, we must say this. I don't want to accuse anyone of betraying. I don't want to use this kind of language. No, it's useless. But we must not despair from calling out and from holding parties responsible. Just maybe, a conscience could awaken, an honor could awaken here or there. Now, when it comes to the resistance movements, and here is the last part. The Islamic resistance in Iraq has begun to take its responsibilities, and it announced that it could begin a new phase of involvement. The colleagues, the brothers, the honorable brothers in Yemen, the Yemeni army, the Ansar Allah movement, the Yemeni people, the people of perseverance who are subject to injustice, the Mujahideen, openly, despite all of the American and Western and foreign threats, despite all this, they have taken a number of initiatives up until now. They sent their missiles and their drones, even if they were shot down. However, when they continue, in the end, they'll reach their destination. These missiles, these drones, these Yemeni drones will reach Eilat and will reach the south of Palestine and will reach the Israeli military bases, the occupying bases in southern Palestine. So we salute them. Now, when it comes to us in Lebanon, because some say Sayyid will announce that we have begun to intervene. We began our role on the 8th of October. We began our involvement on the 8th of October. The Islamic resistance in Lebanon began its operations the second day after Al-Aqsa storm. Yes, indeed. Actually, on Saturday, we were surprised just like anyone else. And we quickly transferred from one phase to another. And on that second day, the operations began in the Kfar Shorba Hills and Shab'a Farms area. And then it expanded to include the complete Lebanese border region with occupied Palestine. And you followed, and you are following the operations on a daily basis in detail. What is going on our front is very important and has a very big impact. Some who expect or are calling on Hezbollah to quickly intervene in a full-scale war with the Israeli enemy, for them, maybe what's happening on the border area is something limited. But if we were to take a really objective look at what is going on, it's very important. It has a very big impact. And it won't be limited to this scale anyway. What is going on our Lebanese front, on the one hand, is unprecedented in the history of the entity ever since 1948, and ever since there were Israeli military bases on the border with Lebanon, and ever since there were settlements and settlers and occupiers in northern occupied Palestine on the border with Lebanon. Even in the July 2006 war, nothing happened like what is happening now ever since the 8th of October until today. For all of the Israeli military bases, from the sea to the high areas of the Shuba farms and Shuba hills, for these bases to be subject to daily attacks, precise attacks targeting these bases. It includes targeting tanks, vehicles, drones, soldiers, and their gatherings, and their technical equipment, which is their eyes and ears, and in all different weapons being used. The Islamic resistance in Lebanon, ever since the 8th of October, is waging a real conflict. Nobody can really feel what it is except those who are on the border area, the fighters and the inhabitants of that area. It is a real battle, and it's different from all the previous battles waged by the resistance in Lebanon, whether it be before 2000 or in 2006 and after. It is a different kind of battle. Its circumstances, its goals, its tools, its targets, the measures being taken, and so. For this reason, we had this high number of courageous, sacrificing martyrs who insisted on staying on the front lines. Brothers, colleagues, on Saturday, on the 7th of October, meaning just after the Al-Aqsa storm operation, they began to withdraw conventional forces from the border. Let me explain what these operations have achieved up until now. Of course, we have 57 martyrs on the Lebanese front, including the two martyrs from the Lebanese brigades, in addition to the Qassam Brigade martyrs, in addition to the Al-Quds brigades in Lebanon and the civilian martyrs. So these martyrs, this blood, what has this accomplished? It's very important to know this. First of all, on the border on Saturday, 7th of October, the enemy withdrew conventional forces from the border with Lebanon, because, of course, they were in a state of moral collapse and they wanted to gather their strength, and they hence called upon the reserves for Gaza, the Gaza Strip, which is under a siege, this narrow, very small area. They wanted to take all their army to Gaza. They wanted to withdraw from the West Bank, from northern Palestine, and make up for them by some reserve forces. And they called the reserve troops. Maybe this is unprecedented. Maybe it's happened once or twice before with this entity. Now, the operations which began, and day after day, they would escalate, reaching the stage which we saw yesterday. This forced the enemy to keep their forces on the border on northern occupied Palestine, and to even add troops to that front. Some of the troops, even the elite troops which they wanted to take from the West Bank to Gaza, they had to send to northern occupied Palestine. And so, the Lebanese front has very much diverted resources and troops which were going to be dedicated for Gaza and diverted them away to another location. Yes, we are exposing ourselves to danger. That's true. Some people in Lebanon say that we're taking an adventure. That's true, yes. But this adventure or this risk, it's based upon correct calculations. Look, if we would have been satisfied just to have political solidarity and hold protests every day and the Israelis would be comfortable on the northern border, all their troops would be sent to Gaza. But the Lebanese front, what did it accomplish? Now, I have accurate numbers regarding the number of soldiers and vehicles and contingencies and brigades, etc. But because it needs explanation and accurate figures, I requested from my colleagues to give me a general number, an average. Today, the Lebanese front was able to attract all the Israeli army to the border, or half of it. Half of the Israeli army is there on the border. And a large number of them are elite forces. And they could have been sent to Gaza. Number two, half of the Israeli naval capabilities are now in the Mediterranean Sea, just adjacent to us. Number three, one quarter of the air force are dedicated towards Lebanon. Number four, around half of the missile defense, the Iron Shield, etc., Patriot, around half of this equipment is dedicated to the Lebanese front. Around one third of the logistic forces are dedicated to the Lebanese front. This is one of the fruits. This is one of the achievements. Now, the colleagues maybe could later on give me accurate numbers. This was just a general figure, an approximate figure. That's number one. Number two, the displacement of tens of thousands of those inhabitants of these settlements and other thousands leaving their homes. There are some who left out of their own free will. Some of them were told to leave by the Israeli army. In the north, we have 43 settlements which were evacuated. And now, most of the people in settlements are troops, not civilians. In the south, on the adjacent side, over 50 settlements were evacuated. Those who were evacuated from the north and south, they put real pressure, psychological, moral, financial, economic pressure. And we're seeing now the Israeli finance minister crying out. He's talking about the pressures. The third issue, which is no less important, is that these operations on the border in the Shabah farms have caused a great state of anxiety and terror on part of the Israeli military and political leadership, and even for the Americans, who I will talk about briefly in the end. Fear that this front will head towards more escalation or an all-out war, or fear that this front could snowball towards a wide-scale war. And this is a realistic expectation. It could happen. And the enemy must take this into consideration. And it is. It was expressed by them. They spoke about it. And it's part of their calculations. And we read this also in all of the American and French and European and Western messages and some Arab messages which we get every day. Ever since October 7 until today, we're getting these messages. So, this state of anxiety, this ambiguity, this state of horror of the leadership of the enemy, this serves two main purposes. Number one, it makes the enemy calculate very carefully its steps towards Lebanon. We're talking about deterrence here. We're talking about the real Israeli fears. If one operation of the past month, if one operation was to target an Israeli base or tank or military gathering, the enemy couldn't have put up with it. But today, they're putting up with all of this, and they're controlling their reaction because they have a genuine fear of things headed in a direction which they don't want it to head to. Number one, so these operations, this readiness on the front, these daily efforts, this makes the enemy deterred. Otherwise, we all heard the Minister of Defense and the others, the other voices, calling of taking advantage of the American international support of Israel in its war against Gaza to open a war against Lebanon or to carry out a preemptive operation against Lebanon. The operations of resistance in the south and the blood of our martyrs and your martyrs in the south, it sends a message to this enemy which might think to launch an aggression to Lebanon or to launch a preemptive attack against Lebanon. It sends a message that you will commit the biggest act of stupidity, biggest mistake in your life if you do this. So they're trying to threaten us. They say, look at Gaza. And we've seen this from 1948 until today. It's nothing new. From Qana to other massacres, it's not new. On the contrary, what we saw in Gaza makes us more convinced and more faithful in the necessity to stand and confront and not to surrender, whatever be the threats, whatever be the pressures. And number two, the second achievement of these operations and these concerns is that they have to carefully calculate whilst they're carrying out operations in Gaza, especially the infantry, the land operations. So these are the goals. These are the results of the confrontation in the south, the results of the blood of the martyrs. In addition to the material and human losses of this enemy over the past few weeks, these operations and the blood of the martyrs and the sacrifices made by the martyrs, the wounded, the resistance fighters, those who are standing on the front lines, and our honorable people who are still in the villages or who are still today taking up the burden, putting up the burden of being displaced temporarily. These people are all sacrificing in this battle, which indeed deserves such a stance and such a performance. These operations reflect our solidarity with Gaza, with its people, with its resistance, with the blood of the martyrs, the sweat of the mujahideen, staying up awake at night in order to ease the pressures of Gaza. Within, at the same time, we have this state of loss amongst the leadership of the enemy, the military and political leadership. Now, the final point. Let the whole world know. Over the past few weeks, there have been pressures, contacts. We were even told from day one that if you carry out operations, you might, and if you open a front, these American Navy ships have come for you and the American warplanes will bomb you. We were told this on Sunday, on the 8th of October. We were informed of this on more than one occasion, and there was some detail. When some Palestinian groups from Hamas and the Jihad entered from the Lebanese territory into Palestinian occupied Palestinian territory, during that time, there was also a threat that the American warplanes will bomb you. But the first group entered, the second entered, and other groups, well, God willing, will enter. These threats would not change our stance in any way whatsoever. So, for this reason, we began our operations on this front. And what happens, the possible escalation in any direction whatsoever, it depends on two factors, two main factors. Number one, the course of events in Gaza. This front is a front of solidarity, a front of support for Gaza. And so for this reason, what happens on this front is linked to what happens over there. And how the situation evolves over there, it's all linked to that. The second factor regarding our situation on the Lebanese front is what the Zionist enemy does towards Lebanon, the behavior of the Zionist enemy towards Lebanon. Once again, I warn them from some of the bombings which targeted some civilians who fell as martyrs. This might lead us once again to strike a civilian if our civilians are striked. So, what the Israelis do towards Lebanon will also determine how we will act. I say very clearly, openly, and also with constructive ambiguity, I say that all options are on the table on the Lebanese front. I say that all options are on the table, and we can adopt any option at any time. And we must all be ready. We must all be prepared and be present for all possibilities and all assumptions in the future. And to the Americans, I say that threatening us and the resistance fighters in our region will not lead you anywhere. Whether you threaten the countries of resistance or the resistance movements, you know that they sent us messages that if you continue operations in the south, America won't just bomb Lebanon or bomb Iran. Look, to threaten us and the resistance fighters in our region, it will not lead you anywhere. Your navy ships in the Mediterranean don't scare us, and they never did. And I say openly that your ships, which you're using to threaten us, we have made our preparations for them as well. To the Americans I say, remember your defeats in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and remember how you humiliatingly withdrew from Afghanistan. To the Americans I say that those who defeated you in Lebanon at the beginning of the 80s, they are still alive. And together with them we have today their children and their grandchildren. So if the American and Western policy, if it's calling for the conflict not to expand in the region, the way to achieve this is not by threatening the honorable resistance fighters who are defending the oppressed and fighting in the cause of the sanctities. The way to achieve this is to end the aggression on Gaza. And Israel is your tool. It's your servant. It's under your influence. You, Americans, you are the ones who can end the aggression on Gaza because it's your aggression. Those who want to prevent a regional war, and I'm talking to the Americans here, they must quickly proceed to put an end to the aggression on Gaza. And you, the Americans, you know very well that if war were to erupt in the region, that your navy ships, your air force will be to no avail. And those who will pay the price first and foremost, your interests, your troops, your navy ships, they will pay the price first and foremost. They will be the biggest loser. Today, the whole world is called upon, on behalf of this unjust blood, the blood of thousands of women and children in Gaza, on behalf of these civilians, on behalf of the mosques and churches and hospitals, on behalf of everything which is human, anything which resembles humanity and ethics, anything which has any value. All of these people are called upon to have a stance, to work day and night, seriously, to put an end to the aggression. Brothers and sisters, I told the Palestinian people, our people in Gaza, regarding the horizon for all the resistance fighters in Gaza. In the horizon, ever since the resistance began, after the establishment of the entity, we are waging a fight of perseverance, of steadfastness. We have not reached the phase of achieving victory with the knockout blow. We still need some time, just to be realistic. However, we are achieving, we're scoring points. The resistance in Lebanon achieved victory in 1985 and in 2000 and in 2006. And this is how the resistance achieved victory in Gaza. And in this same way, we had achievements made by the resistance. And in this same way, we had the resistance achieve victory in Iraq and in Afghanistan, etc. By steadfastness, by perseverance, by being able to absorb the losses. People come out from beneath the rubble in Gaza and say it's for the sake of the resistance. In the July 2006 war, homes were demolished. People come out and said it's okay, it's for the resistance. These people who came from all over the world, did you find any of them say that our people will sacrifice them for the sake of Israel? We never heard this from them. So, the battle is a battle of perseverance, of steadfastness, of being able to put up with the pain and continue to achieve, make achievements and thwart the plans of an enemy, preventing the enemy from achieving its goals. We all, once again, I repeat, we must focus on ending the aggression on Gaza, and we must also focus on achieving victory in Gaza, on the resistance achieving victory in Gaza. And I say to you, first of all, out of our belief in God's promise, God promised the faithful, the mujahideen. This is God's promise, and God always fulfills His promise. When He really created us, or when He finds us, standing with perseverance and firmness, fighting in His cause with these sacrifices, sacrifice reflects loyalty, which will bring about the holy victory. This is what happened in all previous times, and I personally also, based upon my personal experience with the Imam, the leader, Sayyid Khamenei, who has expressed his determination that Gaza will achieve victory based upon his belief in God and that Palestine will achieve victory. He told us this just a few days after the July 2006 war. when there was no horizon at that time. He told us that you'll achieve victory and you are becoming a regional force. I tell our people in Gaza, despite all of these pains, and to the people of West Bank, to all the Palestinian people, all of the resistance people in the region, all those whose hearts beat, women, children oppressed in Palestine and in Gaza, I say to all of them that taking our responsibility and our standing with steadfastness and our perseverance and continuing to make these sacrifices and this blood for the sake or in the cause of God, the result of all this will be a certain victory, God willing. And even if we are commemorating our beloved cleansed martyrs, we will, God willing, meet together in order to commemorate the victory of Gaza and the people of Gaza and the resistance of Gaza, and may peace be upon you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was live.
Dear listeners, what you heard was Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, the Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, speaking in Beirut. During this speech, Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah said, "We must all know fighting Israel is a clear example of cause of God." He said, "No words can express greatness and steadfastness of people of Gaza and the West Bank." Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah said, "Whole world knows the sufferings of Palestinian people in the past 75 years. He said, "Thousands of Palestinian men, women, and children are in Israeli jails, and some of them for years." He said, "People of Gaza are suffering under all-out Israeli blockade for over 20 years. Also, he slammed international community for ignoring Israeli crimes against Palestinian people. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah said Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was carried out by resistance fighters independently. He said Operation Al-Aqsa Flood proved Palestinian resistance is independent of other regional issues. He said Operation Al-Aqsa Flood proves leaders and fighters of resistance make their own decisions. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah said Operation Al-Aqsa will have great impact on the future of Israeli regime. He said Operation Al-Aqsa proved that Israel is weaker than a spider's web. He said Israel needed U.S. carriers and funds from day one for its war on besieged Gaza. He said Palestinian sacrifices will have great impact on the future of the whole of region. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah said there is no other choice but to resist, occupy your enemy, and make sacrifices. He said Israeli enemy announces goals against resistance that it cannot achieve. He also reiterated Israelis failed to learn lessons from their previous encounters with resistance, adding resistance has always forced Israel to back down from its stated goals. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah said so-called strongest army in the region only bombs civilians and fails to achieve its goals, adding, "Only thing Israeli army has been good at in the past 75 years is committing massacres." He also reiterated this conflict will only end with victory of resistance. The Secretary General of Hezbollah said, "West has been trying to portray Israel as democratic and civilized entity. The West and Israel spread lies, false claims against Hamas." Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah also said the United States is fully responsible for bloodshed in the Gaza Strip, adding, Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah also hailed Iraqi resistance fighters for targeting U.S. bases. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah also said, "Today, defending people of Gaza is an act of humanity," adding, Those silent over Israeli crimes against Gaza must rethink their humanity. He said this war on Gaza is like no conflict before it. The Secretary General of the resistance movement Hezbollah said our first goal must be to end war on Gaza and second, to ensure victory of